Meet Dr. Anne Steptoe, MD and Duke Fuqua MBA, who started the social entrepreneurial venture MedServe, modeled after Teach for America, and aimed at pre-meds looking for primary care experience during a two-year gap between college and medical school. Welcome to the 246th episode of Admission Straight Talk, except it's a podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you show that you both fit in at your target schools and are a standout in the applicant pool. The result? You get a message one day that causes you to jump up and down shouting, "Yes, I'm in!" And not only in, but in at the best program for you. Our guest today, Dr. Anne Steptoe, earned her bachelor's in classics and English at Harvard in 2009. She then worked for 2 years as a health policy senior analyst at Massachusetts General Hospital and attended medical school at Brown. Along the way to her current position as a pediatrics resident at UNC Chapel Hill, she earned an MBA at Duke Fuqua and started her own social enterprise with a partner. There is so much I want to ask her that I'm just going to move right into the interview. Anne, welcome to Admission Straight Talk.
Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. Let's start with background. Can you tell us about your background, where you grew up? What do you like to do for fun today?
Absolutely. I grew up in a small town in West Virginia, and I think it's an unusual way to grow up.
Okay.
And the work that I've done, at the time I was growing up, about 2,000 families in the town where I lived, and it was very common for families and extended families and intergenerational friendships to kind of form the fabric of the town, and that sense of community, I think, has always driven what I like to do professionally and for fun as well throughout the rest of my career, even though I have become a city girl of late. In my free time now, I think I'm very much a North Carolinian. If there are those of you listening who have never been to North Carolina, you should know we have amazing food and one of the most impressive craft brewing scenes in the entire country. And I was not a particular fan of either one of those things. But kind of like basketball enthusiasm, it's sort of in the water here. I've had a little bit of the Kool-Aid.
Okay. How did you go? Well, first of all, I think it's probably a long way from rural West Virginia to Harvard. But how did you go from an undergraduate degree in classics and English to starting medical school in 2 years?
Also a long journey.
Yeah.
I think I knew a couple things at the start of college. I knew that I loved Latin. It had been one of my singular passions in high school, and I was not done studying that field. Along the same lines, I loved to read, and I wanted to spend my college years doing more of that.
Mm-hmm.
I also knew that I knew enough about pathways in those fields to know that I didn't see myself as a professor someday,
okay.
And that was sort of the main stream outlet for folks who were really serious about the fields that I loved. So I wanted to be a student for a little bit longer, but I knew that I needed to go out and seek some professional experiences during my college years to start to answer the question of what I wanted to do with the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And those experiences really started, I talked about community, so I got very interested in public policy as sort of an obvious extension of that idea of community. And I was fortunate enough to have some internships on Capitol Hill very early in my college career. And through an accident in mentorship, I just started seeking out who the most exciting people were in my offices and what they were working on. And it happened to be that the person whose job excited me the most in our office was the health policy legislative aide.
Hmm.
I loved that. He would be on the phone with a single mom back home in West Virginia in the morning, walking her through the process of enrolling her child in CHIP. And then in the afternoon, she would be in these huge plenary sessions about what the future of the entire healthcare system looked like. And that kind of micro and very macro look at change for communities, I found really unique to healthcare and really fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
But that still didn't get me to medical school.
Right.
In fact, I thought that was the last career that I wanted to have. I was hospitalized as a 7 or 8 year old and had some complications, and thought that as a result, thought that doctors were just about the worst. And so I never saw that really as a career pathway for me. But I was, another summer, I had been given a small grant to go back to West Virginia and to ask what, in retrospect, was sort of an arrogant question about trying to figure out the disconnect between state health policy around obesity and what was actually happening on the ground, because there were lots happening at the policy level and we were still ranking among the worst states in the country in terms of our rates of obesity and complications from it. And I think that the undertone of the project, and the reason why I thought it was, I think in retrospect it was a little arrogant, is the sort of underlying question was, what are those pesky doctors doing on the ground that is messing up our beautiful portrait of how an ideal healthcare system should function? And of course, it took me, so I was asked to do some qualitative research in a family medicine center in a rural underserved part of West Virginia. And it took me about a day and a half of being there to realize that we weren't asking the right questions. And in fact, that there was a huge disconnect, because people like me who had gotten really enthused about health policy and healthcare systems at the big national level, we didn't have a ton of experience of healthcare on the ground other than maybe being patients. And I was a typical 20-something in that I don't think I'd gotten my annual physical in several years at that point. So I was really struck that summer by how little I knew about how healthcare functioned on the ground. And I really think the reason that that was a turning point for me in terms of getting towards medical school was that I was introduced to this concept of the doctor as an agent of change in their community. Mm-hmm. Because what I found in the project was that in the presence of this disconnect that was really had fault on both sides in terms of the relationship between policy and providers. Providers were stepping in and filling gaps, and sort of foreshadow my entrepreneurial interest. They were really entrepreneurs in their communities and coming up with really neat projects inside their clinics that were trying to fill gaps in the absence of places where policy could be helpful. And that for me was a light bulb moment of really getting to sit even more so than the policy folks I had met at that nexus of helping at a micro level and then helping, mm-hmm. getting help at the level. And that was, from there I was hooked.
So did you do a post-bac program? Did you do an informal post-bac? I mean, I assume you hadn't had the science prerequisites at that point.
So I was lucky enough to have figured this out just at the end of my sophomore year.
Oh, all right.
So I was lucky that my college had a sort of a core curricular program. So I had done enough introductory science classes through meeting my requirements for the core that I was able in the 2 years to stack a few extra classes on and to do, I did organic chemistry in the summer. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. With just those little modifications, I was actually able to do core pre-medical requirements before graduating.
And then you decided to do a gap year or two gap years.
That's right. And for me, it was really about wanting to confirm, because I was a later student in terms of feeling solid in my interest in medicine. And it was sort of like you mentioned, not a natural fit necessarily for a classic major. And so I had really been serious about my dream to read and do classics to its fullest in my undergrad years. And so I had been wrapped up my senior year of college in a very wonderful thesis process for my major. And I took a job at MGH, as you mentioned, mostly to test out my interest in the field, to give myself a little bit more time for some of the prereqs, especially the MCAT, and to see if I could combine. I had experienced a lot in the health policy world, but I had never really experienced big medicine or academic medicine. And I was, especially coming off of writing a thesis, I wanted to make sure that I could still see parts of the academic process that I loved about being a humanities student in the field of medicine.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you applied, obviously, you got in and you attended Brown Medical School. What did you like best about your med school experience? It's quite different from your undergrad.
Yes, it was quite different. For me, I think that it was important for me to still be myself in the medical school process. And I think that that's challenging in ways that I didn't fully realize at that point in my career. And one of the biggest challenges to that is that most people, have not had so little choice in their educational process since maybe elementary or sometimes high school.
Right.
And the idea that I and all of my colleagues had a completely non-tailored curriculum for 4 years and 1 year of a little bit of choice there at the end, I knew was going to be, as someone who liked to sit at the intersection of different fields and be interdisciplinary, I knew that was going to be challenging for me. So one of the reasons that I chose Brown was for its scholarly concentration program, which allowed time and space and curriculum for students who were interested in either specific issues or populations in healthcare or fields that were interdisciplinary with healthcare. So as you can imagine, not surprisingly, I chose health policy as my scholarly concentration. But for me, that was a little oasis of being able to remind myself and continue to learn towards ways of thinking and issues that I was really passionate about that may or may not have made it into the medical school curriculum.
So you really like this, the interdisciplinary options at Brown, and that was what you look back on fondly. What could be improved at Brown in terms of your medical school experience?
I think that the life of a medical student sometimes boils down to very boring nuts and bolts in ways that I didn't. I mean, I was very, I think, theoretical and a little bit lofty in my what I was looking for in a medical school when I was an applicant. And of course, we should layer onto this how incredibly stressful the process is and how easy it is to get wrapped up in wanting to be wanted by school rather than figuring out the best school for you.
Absolutely.
So with all of those dynamics in the background, I didn't ask hard questions when I was an applicant to medical school, and I didn't ask detailed questions about what would that actually mean for my life and what does this look like on a day-to-day basis. And I think a particularly hilarious example of that in retrospect is another aspect that drove me to Brown was an emphasis on the humanities and medicine in their curriculum. And it's true that does exist. But I saw this as a classics major as a way to not let my love of classics and English atrophy. And I was hoping and had this, again, very lofty vision that I was going to be taking, you know, a Latin class every other semester. I mean, in retrospect, it sounds silly. And I think there are smarter and more pragmatic medical school applicants than I, but What I never asked is how many people at Brown actually do this, even though it is that there was a policy that they would have let me get medical school credit for taking those courses as long as they were somehow related. And it was great that there was a policy and there was some institutional support for that. But when I actually asked that question after I was a student, I learned I couldn't find anyone who had done that. And when I was looking to older students to give me recommendations on when to do it, I was told, well, maybe you could do it for a little bit in your fourth year, but it might be hard.
Yeah.
So I think that it's a real phenomenon that the medical school curriculum is all-encompassing and sometimes all-enveloping. And if you are an interdisciplinary person or someone who wants to do things that are a little bit outside of or different from that traditional path, it's important to just be aware that you may have to work harder to do that and that it may not always be available to you in your institution. And I think that's ultimately what I learned. And part of my journey towards business school was really being honest with myself about what I needed in my educational experience for the career in healthcare that I wanted. And then recognizing that maybe I couldn't get all of that just through my medical training.
Okay. All right. That's very thoughtful feedback. I suspect that that's not specific to Brown, though. That would be true of almost any medical school just because the curriculum is so demanding.
I think it's true of every school, but there are differences in the percentage of students in a given student body that are interested in doing different things. And so as I started to look around at other medical schools, and all of this was after
These are points that are good for applicants to consider before you considered them.
Yes. But I realized that there were other medical schools where it was almost ubiquitous for people to take more than 4 years to get through school because they were doing different things. They were diving deep into a research field they were passionate about. They were getting dual degrees. And at my institution, it was still true that it was a very traditional medical curriculum at the time. And it was still true that 90% of my classmates would graduate on time. I think I was the only individual in my year that pursued an MBA. And that was still a relatively unusual thing for students to do in a way that I don't think is true of every medical school, but certainly for those with traditional curriculums and very clinical focus, it is not completely specific to Brown.
Right. I think I might be off on the statistic, but I think it's about 3% of MDs have MBAs. So obviously very few MDs go for the MBA. I think your feedback is really, really very thoughtful and very valuable for pre-med applicants to hear. So thank you for that. Today, you're a resident in pediatrics at UNC. Did you ever have, either in medical school or, you know, now that you're a resident, a rotation or a period in your path to date when you thought of giving up on medicine? You were very thoughtful about deciding whether to go into it, but what about once you got there?
I don't know that I had a singular moment. I think everyone who's a thoughtful person at some point realizes at the end of a 24-hour shift in year.
If you're realizing anything at the end of 24 hours.
Right. I think you would be either superhuman or out of touch with yourself to not wonder if there aren't alternative ways to make an impact.
Okay.
But I think that for me, it was more an accumulation of small moments along the way when this is true, I think, throughout my medical education, small moments when I felt like I was getting sucked onto a conveyor belt that is a lot of medical education at any institution, and that I had lost a little bit of control over or maybe felt separated from my vision of what I wanted in this career pathway. And for me, it wasn't necessarily difficult experiences like a bad day at the hospital or something very sad happening, but just the absence of engaging certain parts of my brain.
Mm-hmm.
So medicine, a lot of medicine, especially in traditional curriculums, it's a lot of memorization.
Yeah.
There's a lot of very technical kind of clinical skill building, but there's not always as much emphasis on critical reasoning, on sort of change concepts, and other things, sort of systems level perspectives that I loved and thrived on. And so I think that if there were moments, it would be moments when I saw gaps in the system that I had no power or structure in my curriculum to address. And I used to carry around my third year of medical school, I'd carry around a little slip of paper in my white coat and just write those things down because that was all like it really felt empowered to do at the time is at least capture the insight that I was getting by being a frontline healthcare worker with the hope that someday I'd be able to figure out a way to start addressing some of these things.
Did some of that frustration lead you to apply to MBA programs or was it a different motivation?
No, it really was that frustration of feeling that there were things that I wanted to do and insight that I was gaining into the healthcare system that made me want to have some sort of impact. And I didn't feel satisfied with the answers that I was getting in medicine that if I put my head down someday, 7 to 10 years from now, I might be able to start to have that impact. And And actually, MedServe is a great example of that. I proposed MedServe my first year of medical school as my scholarly concentration project in health policy. And I was really already sort of excited about the idea of it. And I was told that very, very kindly and with great intentions that it was too ambitious of a project for the medical school framework, and that what I really needed to do was do a small research study that I might be able to publish in a journal somewhere, because that would be very good for my residency application. And so I think it was a great example of some ways of my seeing the potential for impact somewhere in the healthcare system, but being told that now wasn't the right time and medical school wasn't the right place.
That's interesting. Did you find that Duc Fouqua's MBA program gave you or allowed you the kind of breadth that you didn't get in medical school? That appreciated the critical thinking skills, et cetera?
Absolutely. I think that the breadth and freedom, I mean, other than college, I think the MBA is maybe the only professional degree out there that truly in some ways a blank slate degree that you are responsible for crafting. There are certainly people who come in who get to use the process to explore a couple of different fields and who don't have necessarily a strong singular vision about what their purpose in coming in, what they would like to do. But I think it's a much harder experience coming in that way. And so for me, Fuqua was a canvas for me to try to accumulate a unique skill set for this idea of, can I be someone who makes an impact in healthcare through projects and programs? And if so, how do I go about doing that for the specific issue that I'm passionate about now, but more broadly, what are the skills I need to do this for the rest of my career?
What did you like best about Duc Fouqua's MBA program?
I love, hard to pick one thing.
That's good.
So I'll pick a couple. I mean, okay. One is, I love the accessibility of it. I had no business, you've heard my career pathway, I had no traditional business experience coming into business school. Mm-hmm. And I had really just 2 years of work experience. And some of that, in retrospect, was translatable to the business school classroom.
Sure.
But compared to the experience that my peers had coming in, this is a very foreign skill set. And I hadn't even taken an econ class as an undergraduate. I was truly a...
It was in English. It wasn't in Latin. Why bother?
Right. I felt very, very foreign from my humanities world. So I was very nervous about the process walking in. And I think I gave everyone on my team early on, I would start with disclaimers about my background and sort of almost apologize for my background early on. And it took maybe 2 weeks to realize that the emphasis on critical thinking in the MBA program means that as long as you've had some thought-provoking career experience, you have something to contribute. And I loved that starting point, and I learned so much. And of course, I had nowhere near the technical knowledge and expertise that my colleagues with more traditional backgrounds had, but all of those gaps I filled in at least up to a threshold of knowledge. And from there, I loved the accessibility, the way that the program was structured so accessibly. I also loved its emphasis on healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, I don't have the luxury of having had multiple MBA experiences. So of course, I think that the one I happen to have is optimal. But I do think that I would have felt some of the isolation from my passion areas that I felt in medical school in reverse in business school had I not had such a strong focus on healthcare in my program. And by the same token, I mean, more practically, I don't think I would have found co-founders and volunteers and an enormous network of resources and advisors the way that I had it at Duke, because I was a non-traditional business school student with pretty non-traditional goals coming out of business school. And that, you know, there are, if 10% of your class is interested in healthcare in an MBA, and you're as unusual as I was as an MBA student, you're going to be the only one of you. And I was shocked and so incredibly lucky that I was not the only one of, in business one, that there were so many people who were really excited about the field that I was really excited about.
That's great. Now, you mentioned MedServe a minute ago. Can you tell us what it is and how you started it? I know it grew out of something that you saw while you were still at Brown, but if you could give us a little bit of background on that.
Absolutely. So MedServe is a 2-year service learning program that works with students between college and medical school to connect them with service, full-time service engagements in the primary care arena. In underserved communities around the state of North Carolina. So it may be an urban community that is socioeconomically underserved or a rural community that is underserved for a variety of reasons, some of which may just be their geography.
I realize it's focused now on North Carolina. Is it only open to residents of North Carolina, or is it open to...
It's not.
Okay.
We recruit from about 60 universities across the country.
Wow.
We've had applicants and candidates matriculate into our program who are originally from the West Coast. We certainly love when our applicants feel some tie either to the state or to the types of communities that they may be serving. But we have heard from those who have come into the, you know, sort of moved across the country to come into the program that it's so hard to find clinical engagements that connect to this idea of community service to medicine, clinical medicine, that they're willing to move.
So let's say, you gave a little bit of background on how you had the idea. I mean, did Duke play a role, other than the fact that you met your partner there, did Duke play a role in helping you get it going? And what was that role, if yes?
Yes, they played a huge role, and I think they did so on a number of dimensions. So to be really concrete about it, the money, I spent the summer, I did not do a summer internship the summer between my first and second year of business school. Mm-hmm. I used that time to do the market research and business model development for MedServe. And I was able to do that because the Center for the Advancement of Social Entrepreneurship at Duke, the Case Institute, actually paid me money and gave me a sizable grant to be able to go out and do that work.
Wonderful.
I didn't realize it, but I had been doing market research for MedServe for a long time. I mean, the project really came out of my getting to medical school and realizing that the experiences I had, as wonderful as they were inadequate to really show me how to connect being a doctor to having the impact that I wanted to make. Mm-hmm. And so I had 3 years to sort of sit and stew on this disconnect and look around at my colleagues and understand their similar feelings. And so I had a lot more of the pieces to start the company than I think I realized I had. For me, it was, again, I talked about sort of feeling like an outsider in the MBA program and feeling very non-traditional. And a lot of what Duke gave me was confidence and a structure for starting the program that I don't think I would have had, even though I may have had the pieces of information that I needed. So especially there's a called P4E, or the Program for Entrepreneurs, and it's a curriculum that Duke has that actually allows students to get course credit for doing entrepreneurship and provides them with an official curriculum and structure. And it's not, unfortunately, I was sort of hoping it would be a step-by-step guidebook of this is what you do next to start a business, and that's not entrepreneurship. But it gave me enough of the tools, and frankly, it gave me a network that built up my confidence to be able to do this. And that I think is, I don't think I could have done that without Duke.
Okay. Very interesting. Now let's just focus a little bit more on MedServe. So let's say I'm a senior in college right now, and I hear this podcast And I think, this sounds pretty cool. I will ask for the URL. I think it's med-serve.org, right? I go to this, is there an application I fill out? And if I'm accepted, what happens then?
Absolutely. So you have our URL correct, and there is an application process on our website. Our main application deadline this year will be February 15th.
Mm-hmm.
And we get feedback every year that our application process is long and a little bit intensive compared to other job opportunities. But there's a method behind our madness. We exist, I think, for a couple of reasons for students. One is it's so important to get clinical experience and real in-depth clinical experience. I hate shadowing. I don't think that it's beloved by providers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a terrible feeling. And I remember it being a terrible feeling to stand behind someone's shoulder and just feel like an onlooker. So I think that it's really important for us, and our philosophy in the application process is that if you're going to go out and get clinical experience, it should be in service to figuring out the broader impact that you want to make in a career in medicine. And we don't do the application process the way I think some of, the medical school application process works in some ways. We're not kind of comparing people. We get amazing candidates who are really better medical school applicants than I was, I think. But we're not comparing them against each other in a way that's saying who is minutely better,
right,
or more qualified than the other person. We are very deliberately looking to match people to
specifically
do what we call spark matching with specific clinics to make specific impacts. So, for example, we operate a fellowship position at a clinic in a rural community in eastern North Carolina that serves, in addition to the local population, a large migrant farm worker population.
Yes.
And I would trust any of my fellows to have a good experience there and to be confident and caring. But the fellows who have been there, who I think have thrived, are individuals who one had spent the year before he was there in rural Alaska working on public health issues, and the 6 months before he came into the program in South America on sort of cultural immersion and trying to understand health issues of Latin American populations. And my other fellow there had done community outreach work with a Hispanic community organizing group in eastern North Carolina. And just for them, yes, it's great to get some clinical experience. And I think they're going to go in really strong medical students. But I hope that more importantly, it's been a time for them to deepen their passion about areas they already cared very deeply about. And that to me is the broader point. And that's how we are selecting candidates. And so we have a long online application for that reason. We conduct interviews with candidates who are selected to interview. And a lot of the interview is geared towards making sure we understood who that person was on their paper application.
Right.
And then we do a final interview process where our candidates actually interview with clinics themselves, because I want to confirm that what I think is a great spark match of a relationship between a clinic and a candidate is actually that exciting.
Okay. That's fascinating. All right. So I apply, I'm accepted, I'm placed in a clinic that you believe is the best fit for me. Do you provide any training?
We do. Some of our candidates come in with clinical experience. They might have been a CNA or an EMT in college. But we have other applicants who have had no clinical experience at all and have a lot of, there's a lot of on the job learning. But we
kind of like you when you graduated Harvard, right?
Right. Right. There was at no point in my first job that I used much of what I knew from the classics in English world, unfortunately. and there's a huge learning curve. I think that is it feels especially foreign when you're going into a clinical role, because there's a skill set that is new, that very tangibly new, in a way that even my learning curve in my sort of entry into science is still not quite as much as these folks experience. And frankly, they also are doing it in new communities, sometimes hundreds of miles from where they had gone to college. And so I tell fellows it's a brave thing that they do. And that's the sort of bravery of service experiences. But we try to at least raise the threshold of knowledge so that people feel like they've got some tools in their pocket, knowing that it's still going to be a learning curve. And we hold a 2-week training institute boot camp where we go over some of the background knowledge that people need to know, and kind of understand the public health landscape of North Carolina, the business of medicine here, all of those informing pieces of background knowledge. We teach skills, very concrete things like taking vital signs, mm-hmm. and rooming mm-hmm. patients. And we also talk a lot about kind of the mindset for service that's productive, and helping people prep sort of from a mental and emotional standpoint about what it might be like to be the only MedSurg fellow in a tiny rural town in the mountains of Western North Carolina, and how they go about forming community and integrating with community and knowing that that's the case.
Okay. Are the fellows paid? Are they paid a stipend or?
They are. Fellows are paid a $20,000 annual stipend for their participation in the program. And I wouldn't say that I'm proud of the salary. We tried to find a salary that was a living wage for communities that we work in. Uh-huh. But we know that it's not a glamorous salary. And so we try to provide some support around financial planning, and also around some of the larger expenses that fellows will have, particularly housing, because it's quite a process to even figure out where there is a rental or housing market in some of the communities that we work in. So we try to be supportive of fellows. And to that end, we do a lot of our role after fellows are out in the field becomes a continuing education role. We have quarterly what we call skills summits that happen throughout the 2-year experience. And some of what we talk about is just continuing knowledge gaining so that fellows understand and can talk through and troubleshoot situations that they may encounter that are difficult. But we also turn to do a lot of professional development work and talk about the med school application process and how to survive things like the MCAT and the application process itself.
Mm-hmm.
I think especially geared towards students who have this interest and passion for service and whose goals are a little bit different than the traditional med school applicant. I think universities have career centers that have wonderful insight for very traditional medical school applicants, and that's not generally our target pool that comes into MedSurg. And so for folks who are more interested in interdisciplinary pathways or more driven toward careers in service or primary care or rural medicine, we can provide some specific guidance on how to survive that process of applying and still prioritize those things that are important to them.
It sounds on some level to me like, on one hand, MedSurg is a great idea for the underserved communities that you're working in, but it also sounds like the kind of program you kind of wished you could have gone into.
It is absolutely the program that I would have done at the end of college had it existed.
Well, many entrepreneurs start like that. Many businesses start like that. So that makes a lot of sense. Another question for you. If I'm a pre-med and I'm thinking, well, I could do MedSurg or I could just be a scribe, what's the advantage to me of going the MedSurg route? I want to get some experience. I want to get more clinical experience before I make the commitment to medical school, much like you were saying when you graduated Harvard. That was one of your motivations for working at Massachusetts General. So let's say today I'm in the same place and I'm thinking of either I'm going to go work as a scribe or a CNA or an EMT, or I could join MedSurg. What would be the advantage to me of joining MedSurg? in addition to being able to work in underserved communities?
So I see two big differences. And one thing I'll say is that the wonderful access to patients that you're going to remember and experiences that will impact you, I think will happen across both of those experiences. But the things I hear from fellows that drive them to our program and that they feel are different, or one is this desire to give people some exposure to what it might be to make an impact through a clinical career in medicine. So our fellows absolutely work in clinical positions. They might be a medical assistant. They might actually be a medical scribe in their practice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But they spend half of the 2 years doing that role. So half of their time over a 2 year period is spent in that clinical role. The other half is spent in what we call a community role.
Okay.
So they might be part of a community health worker team or work as a health coach or work on quality improvement initiatives. And the idea of having dedicated time to that is giving them exposure to and skill building in these healthcare systems issues that I think is very specific to this population of people who want to make an impact and a difference in underserved communities through their career in medicine. But also I hope is just an exciting, engaging way to spend 2 years. I think being a note taker for 2 years is wonderful clinical exposure, very hard.
Yeah.
The other thing that I think we work very hard to foster is making this position not just a job, but a program. And I'm really proud of the sense of cohort and camaraderie across the people who come into the program, who have become friends and networks with each other in a way that I don't think students have access to by just getting a clinical position at an individual practice. And I'm really proud that fellows will cite the having this cohort of people to depend on as one of the biggest benefits of coming into the program. And I think that, you know, all of the continuing education things we do and bringing fellows back together in person all try to foster that sense of community.
Mm-hmm. Well, like you said at the beginning of the call, community is something that kind of is a theme that runs through your life.
Absolutely.
So, you know, you're kind of going full circle here. Looking forward, do you have any plans to expand MedServe beyond North Carolina? And what are your plans for the future, both personally and for MedServe?
I think for MedServe, we continue to operate at a scale where we every year we have more qualified applicants than we can take, and we always have more interest from clinics than we can accommodate.
Wow.
And it really in ways that surprised me. So our fellow acceptance rate last year was about 10%. So I see a lot of potential for growth. And of course, I mean, I'm a kid from West Virginia. I would love to, it would of course be a dream to take a program like this back home. We've been working this year to really scale the program in North Carolina. And so we will have a much larger footprint than we have had our past years of operating this next year.
Mm-hmm.
From there, I think I see opportunities for us to potentially expand the program elsewhere. And we get requests from individuals in other states that have similar dynamics to North Carolina. And so I definitely see the potential in that, and we're starting to work towards that. But I think I'm very mindful of not wanting to, I of course want to meet the demand that's out there for a program like this. And if I can get more students who are excited about this into experiences, great. But I don't want to scale the program at such a rate that the things which I think make it really special get lost in the process. And so we're taking it one level at a time. And our intermediate next step is to really expand here in the state. And so we'll be about tripling the size of our cohort.
Wow. That's pretty impressive.
It's really exciting. And I think that what makes it extra exciting for me is the fact that we're still getting, I mean, we're still getting such a high quality of applicants that I really feel like we can start to meet some of the demands that's out there and not have to disappoint people who are really so qualified and have something to contribute to these communities. For me personally, I think in the short term, my path is a little bit set, and I was talking earlier about the fixed nature of medical education. I'm in my internship year of residency, so I have I actually have 4 more years. Or
you are very busy. You are really busy.
But I think I've it's kind of a nice. It's a nice point to things I learned earlier in my career because I'm a pediatrics with a 3-year residency. I'll be doing my residency in 4 because I was able to negotiate a part-time residency program.
Okay.
That allows me to work clinically about 2.5 months, then have a month dedicated to my work on MedSurf, work 2.5 months clinically, and so on and so on. And for me, this was the first time I've really been able to assert my desire for interdisciplinary work now and a little bit of tailoring of the academic process into my, you know, a path that seems very set. And to the credit of UNC, they were receptive to this idea, and I'm midstream right now. So, but I think that in terms of my personal life and my professional life, that's my path for the next 3 years. And after that, I think, I see, especially coming out of my MBA, a much broader, set of options and potentials than I think I saw beforehand. What I do know is that I'll be somewhere working in the healthcare system. I hope on new and innovative ideas, that are of benefit to communities, and working in some way in some leadership capacity to help drive that change. So I could see myself doing it through scaling MedSurf. I could see myself doing it through working at really innovative health systems or organizations that are coming up with new models of delivering care. I think the possibilities in a good and exciting way seem even broader now than they did before.
Okay. That sounds like you have lots of opportunities. And I was wondering how you were balancing. It sounds like MedSurf is growing and obviously residency is demanding. Whether you, I realize the internship is probably the most demanding, but it's wonderful that UNC gave you that flexibility.
It is wonderful. And it was, you know, I felt in going through the process that it was a gamble. And I know that for every school that I interviewed at and liked and talked to about this, there were probably 3 or 4 for every 1 school that that entertained it who said, "You're crazy. There's no way we would there's no way we would entertain this."
Right.
It was really important to me. The program is really important to me, and I felt and continue to feel committed to the people who come into the program. To be there and to continue to foster it and help be a force in leading it. But I also love the work. And I think that, well, I know from my prior experience that just shutting off one side of who I am and what drives me is not a sustainable way of living. And so I certainly close doors and opportunities that I was excited about, and I think in an alternate pathway I could have been happy at, but I get to be very happy in doing the things that drive me, and so I think I am very lucky in it, but it was also a priority set for me, and I couldn't, in terms of balancing, I couldn't do this alone. When I came into residency, I was lucky enough to be able to hire
a small staff who run the program day to day and ensure that the work of the program and the scaling process gets moved forward every day, even if it's a day when I'm particularly swamped at the hospital. And so I provide some guidance and a lot of kind of technical assistance about what we've done and what has and hasn't worked well in the past. And I'm able to fill in more actively in the times that I have dedicated to MedServe. But I have found that engaging that staff and training them to really be the day-to-day drivers of the organization has helped it grow, even though I certainly have a large new responsibility in my life. And I found that, and yes, I come home after a long day at the hospital and I usually do a couple of hours of med surge. But I earlier, I love it. And so I wouldn't be happy not having it be some part of my life. And sometimes on my clinical rotations, it has to be a smaller part of my life, but I have figured out ways that I can still make an impact, even though it flexes in terms of the type of impact I might be making based on my schedule at a given month.
Okay. Is there anything you would have liked me to ask you? You've been very generous with your time and thoughts. Is there anything that you feel I didn't cover that's important to let listeners know?
No, I think we talked about the process of my being an applicant and all of the things I wish I had known. So it sort of sounds cheesy, but I really think if you had to sum up the lesson that I've slowly learned through this process, it's to not lose yourself in the process of getting a professional education and to not, there are a lot of expectations that professions have of their members and that's probably reasonable, but it becomes very easy for eager, well-meaning and high achieving people to go about trying to meet the demands of that profession. And what I think can get lost along the way there. And when I see my colleagues in medicine tire out after 15 or 20 years of education plus work, it's because you sort of get to the end of the educational process. And some people really push the end of that, right? They go on to do their residencies and then their fellowships and suddenly they're 40. But I think that at a certain point, what I see a lot of my colleagues be surprised about is that there's a job at the other end of that and a career pathway. And the process even of going out and getting your first job in medicine, it is like what's their first job. It's a true job seeking process like anybody else has been doing for that last decade that you've been in school. And I think it requires some thought about where you want to go and what you want to do in the field of medicine, that if you have truly been on the conveyor belt following one educational experience to another and just striving to do well in what the profession asks of you, it can be really jarring and confusing to get to that point and then to figure out what you want from your life. And I think, you know, doing things like adjusting my schedule and starting MedServe are really, at the end of the day, me learning to assert and build a portfolio towards what impact I would like to make in healthcare now. And not, you know, one, because I couldn't spend 10 years not engaging this part of my brain, but also try to keep in touch with ultimately this is a job and what do I want to do with this job and in this field someday, and not just what is demanded of me at the hospital today.
Right. Well, that's very good advice. And, you know, I can think of a couple of other clients also who kind of were very determined to maintain, yes, to be shaped by their education. That's the point of education. But it's also to not lose parts of them that they didn't want to lose. So that's, you know, just really, really important, I think, to self-health and balance and being a happy person. And I think we're just about finished. Where can listeners learn more about you online if they have follow-up questions, or if they want to learn about MedServe? Where can they learn about MedServe?
I think a great stopping point is www.med-serve.org. It has not only more details about the program, but also a little bit about my background and some connections to other interviews I've given about living through this process of being a medical school and a business school applicant and then student.
Sounds good. We'll link to MedServe as well as to other resources related to this podcast from accepted.com/246. Listener, I want to mention to you something that Ann told me after the podcast, and that is that the application deadline is not a hard and fast deadline if you're interested in MedServe. And because this podcast is going live only 2 days before that deadline, you want to apply and you're after the deadline or you're not sure you're going to be able to complete the application by the deadline, don't let the stated deadline stop you. Contact them and ask for an extension. Tell them that you listen to the podcast on whatever date you listen to it and let them and then just ask if they can give you an extension. So again, listener, thank you too for joining Dr. Ann Steptoe and me for Admission Straight Talk's 246th episode. If you find the show worthwhile, I have a favor to ask. Please tell your friends about the podcast. Your doing so helps us spread the news about Admission Straight Talk and will also help your friends get accepted. Thanks again for coming. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.